This is Rainmaker FM, the broadcast that provides you with the knowledge you need to build your own digital marketing and sales platform that works. I am Robert Bruce, here with Brian Clark, and today we're going to answer a couple of your questions before we get into the main topic, which is seven ways to inexpensively find a topic market that will fuel your digital commerce business. Brian, two questions for you. Number one, Jane Doe asks, if it's really that big a deal to build an online platform on properties you don't own, she says she sees lots of successful people doing it in places like Tumblr, Squarespace, Twitter, and Facebook, but what's the true danger here?
We're still getting this question.
How many years has it been?
I don't know.
That's one thing I forgot to look up is when did
I mean, the evidence keeps mounting in our, you know, and we don't have to do anything because you've got the big Silicon Valley platforms are constantly screwing people over and people still wonder, but yeah, what's the harm?
Everybody
knows.
I will
say that she included Squarespace. Squarespace is a website suite of tools, so it's your site, it's just the way you build it. So I wouldn't include Squarespace. We just distinguish from Squarespace from Rainmaker, and Rainmaker's way more sophisticated and powerful. So most of the people we're talking to, especially on the topic of membership sites and digital commerce and all this, they've graduated beyond Squarespace, you know. But otherwise, I don't consider that sharecropping.
Well, we know the stories of Facebook. We know you just brought up something about Tumblr this morning to me that I hadn't heard about yet.
Well, yeah. So Facebook, of course, you know, they did the biggest bait and switch on people, you know, ever. They basically let people build audiences there. You had a lot of bad advice from short-sighted social media consultants who said, you know, you don't need a website, just build on Facebook. Well, effectively, you know, Facebook has changed the rules so many times since that time that it's ridiculous. But the biggest thing, of course, is that audience that you built, you now have to pay to reach, right? And you're still missing out on all the, you know, value of owning your own media property. That has real value. You can sell a site. You're not going to sell your Facebook page. No one's going to buy that, right? They may buy it in conjunction with your overall media business, but no. So I'm still a little perplexed how entrepreneurs or business people could think that way, but there is a huge tide of people, you know, everything from Clay Shirky's new book to, you know, most people in the startup world. It's like you got to own your own platform. So yeah, Tumblr. You know, when Yahoo bought Tumblr, they said, we're not going to screw you over, Tumblr people.
Well, they never do. These companies never do that.
No, of course not. Well, what did they do last week? Well, they basically decided that Tumblr is going to be a YouTube competitor. So they did a bunch of stuff, including resizing the image field on, you know, everyone's post since the beginning of time, and it broke all the images, and the response is too bad, right? That doesn't happen to you if you own your own property, right? So I think most people get it right now. The fact that some people have, you know, this question, I think, is because they somehow think it's easier or that it's a shortcut. Number one, it's no easier to build an audience, you know, on property you don't own than on you do, right? And secondly, as Sonia says, don't take shortcuts. They take too long. You end up getting screwed by the company that you thought was doing you a favor at the beginning because your interest and theirs are not aligned.
Yeah, and I think the thing you brought it up that people miss most often or don't get or it takes them time to realize is the idea of the, building the digital media asset itself, which of course you can't do on a sharecropped external third-party site, you know, because things like exporting your content, all of this, there's a lot of kind of workarounds for that. But the one thing is the building of value in that asset that you actually own. And for some reason that just kind of skates across the ice and people don't.
Well, it's because people aren't thinking like media entrepreneurs. No media entrepreneur, you know, doesn't own their intellectual property. That is the asset. And yet somehow the internet, you know, I mean, again, I haven't had a chance to read, it's not Clay Shirky's, it's Cory Doctorow. Gosh, totally screwed that one up. But his book, Information Does Not Want, Doesn't Want to Be Free, you know, is about how all these platforms are exploiting creators. And to a certain degree, you know, I'm sympathetic, but it's our own fault if we don't control our own platform. And that's why the Rainmaker platform is our passion. You know, we're giving you the tools to do things easier and more powerful and better. But it's still yours.
Yeah. You know? All right. Question number two, John Doe asks how content curation fits into the Rainmaker media content strategy. Since it's not your own media that you're publishing, should you use it at all? Should you curate at all?
Yeah. You and I have been talking about curation forever. I know you've been.
Well, allow me to elaborate just for a moment here. I believe it was late 2010, early 2011. I'd have to look at the dates, but somewhere back then, I started a little weekly publication called The Lead, which is now Copy Bloggers podcast. But in that, it was a simple curation play, and I gotta say, Brian, at the time, I got a little flack for it, just a little bit. Over this idea of curation and, you know, a post. Now, to be fair, you had been doing this from the very beginning, like so many others. You'd once in a while do a links post, but you did it in a much more casual kind of fun way. But looking at it as a strategy, an actual strategy, and maybe even as a centerpiece around a whole media operation, what do you think of that?
Well, yeah, you know, back when you first started The Lead, I thought it was an interesting little addition to our original content, which of course, you know, our original content does so much better. You know, a link yes. post isn't going to go viral, you know, but as time has gone on and the amount of, you know, basically what happened since that time is content marketing went mainstream and we've got this exponential increase in the amount of content out there. And there's a lot of good stuff out there, but who can find it, you know? And so I'm really starting to find curation as a primary strategy to be much more appealing. In fact, I'm working on a project that is something I've wanted to do for a while. And it's going to be straight up email curation. It'll be using Rainmaker and the new curation tools that'll be coming soon. So I got to say, you know, I'm coming around on it, but, you know, there are certain things about it that I think are important. Number one, you're driving, it's got to be email, right? If you own the list, number one, does it matter what the content is as long as the audience wants it? Yep. Number two, when you curate and you summarize, Dave Pell's newsletter is great. You know, it's just the most interesting stuff that happened that day. What's it called? Next Draft. Yeah. But Dave writes, you know, his own narrative. It is original content with links, right? Yeah. So you're getting social sharing. You're getting search value in there.
And you're getting Dave as opposed to just a link.
Yeah. You're getting a human being with a sense of humor and a perspective instead of, you know, an algorithm. That's the big thing I'm seeing right now. The whole thing toward algorithmically, you know, from Facebook's crazy algorithms to whatever, you know, computers are choosing what you should see. I think there's a real hunger out there for humans to yeah. say, hey, here's what I found and it's fascinating and here's what I think. And that human connection works. But the key is email. You know, Dave Pell has a huge audience that subscribes to email, which is the holy grail, but he is a curator.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So it is doable, and I'm going to make myself an example of how to do this. Some people are like, well, you've already got an existing audience. That's not fair. I don't know. What I want to do, it has nothing to do really with Copy Blogger. And I know, you know, our friend Chris Brogan tried to change directions, and a lot of people resisted. So I don't think it's a lock that you have an existing audience if you're going into a brand new area. So we'll see.
Well, here's the other thing about that. We both, you and I, and many of listeners to this show follow, I'm sure, a few curated either newsletters or folks doing stuff on, you know, third-party services like Twitter. But one part of that that keeps coming up with you and I, between you and I, is that we have yet to see a really smart, powerful revenue model applied to it.
You know what's interesting to me when I look, and I agree with you, I've got the revenue model.
Right.
And it would be, you know, membership based. I hate to say that's the easy part, but it is, you know. What's interesting to me is, can I find the great stuff? Can I, you know, create a voice that is appropriate and engaging for this audience? You know, those type of things you would think, some people say, oh, that's the easy part, but, you know, is it?
Yeah, we'll find out. All right. Thanks for these two questions, folks. To get your own question featured on Rainmaker FM, just head over to rainmaker.fm. Drop it into the comments of one of the episode posts there. Rainmaker FM is brought to you by the Rainmaker platform, the, in our opinion, best and easiest way for content marketers and online entrepreneurs to build a powerful, content-driven digital commerce website. Now, the thing I want to talk about the Rainmaker platform today for just a minute is landing pages. Now, we all know there are great landing page solutions out there for sure. But as with everything else Rainmaker, these are all integrated into the platform. One place, one price. So in this case, I log into Rainmaker, and with two clicks from the dashboard, I'm immediately given a choice whether I want to go with one of 15 beautiful landing page templates there, or whether I want to easily roll my own with the Rainmaker landing page builder. Now, it goes without saying, the templates that we have available to you here are not only beautiful, but they're tested, everything you'd expect on that front. All you need to do is drop in your own copy, hit publish, get to work. And of course, there are many, many more templates on the way. And the point here is that easily built landing pages that actually work are just one small little feature within the integrated Rainmaker platform. If you want to take a look at the whole thing for 14 days without charge, head over to rainmakerplatform.com right now. Quit horsing around trying to build your website and your landing pages and get back to building your business. rainmakerplatform.com. Into the main topic for today's broadcast we go. One of the big questions that comes up again and again and again is around the topic of finding a profitable market. How do you do it? How do you know that it's potentially profitable, and where do you start? So let's talk about the headline you've come up with here, 7 ways to find a topical market that will fuel your digital commerce business. Way number one is, you say, be the market.
Yeah. So first of all, let's just refresh everyone's memory when we use this term digital commerce, because it's kind of a newer term that we've adopted. It essentially means selling premium content. As we talked about last week, it's a little bit more than that. You're really selling the benefits of knowledge, a complete experience of access to others and yourself and other subject matter experts, all that kind of good stuff. But in its simplest form, what is an area where people will invest in online training or some other sort of member-fueled paid content community? So as you mentioned, the first one, be the market. As I mentioned to you, I guess before we went on the air, you know, somewhere around 2001 or 2002, I had somehow educated myself in the world of direct response and direct marketing and all of that kind of good stuff historically, and had been applying it to the internet, right? You know, permission-based email list, all that kind of stuff. And I started seeing opportunities everywhere. Like, you get to that point where you pay attention and you're like, oh, you could do this and that, and that's how you'd make money, right? That's what I mean when I say monetization is easy for me. What is not easy for me is passion and interest in those things, right? There's a million ways to make money, and most of them I do not want to do. Sometimes even things that interest me, I don't want to do, and you have to give me a pep talk and then we move on, right? But you get what I'm saying, you know, if you're not interested, if you're not passionate in something, it is very difficult to do the work yeah. and to carry on and to keep going. And think about it this way. I mean, if you want to be the leader of a tribe, you got to be a member of the tribe. I mean, how often is it successful for an outsider to come in and take over? You know, usually it doesn't work. And it rarely works in online communities. So be interested, passionate, be the person with the problem or desire, and then take that leadership role in helping people who are similar to you. And that, you know, that's very much why I started Copyblogger. You know, people think, well, I'm not an expert yet, but just merely going on your own journey and sharing what you know and bringing people along with you puts you in that role. I mean, look at Darren Rouse's story. No one started out as an expert. They just knew a little bit more than the people, right? It goes back to the curation thing. Like, if you can find this stuff that you are genuinely interested in your own life, in this, you know, project that I'm talking about, it's where I'm at right now. As you know, just like in 2005, I was at a place that resulted in me starting Copyblogger. So this is a tried and true one for me. And from a content standpoint, I think I'm not saying you can't just go in ruthlessly, you know, and learn everything about a market and own it. You can. It's just, it would be hard for me to keep going, you know.
Yeah. And what you brought up a moment ago, I think there's kind of a roadblock people have in their mind by saying, yeah, I can't talk about this stuff. I'm not an expert. I'm not a PhD in XYZ topic. And I don't know if you remember, but growing up, it seemed if anybody was on the radio or on TV or in a magazine being interviewed, well, that depends on what kind of magazine, but it seemed like they were all experts. Like they were all people of great authority. But like you said, when Darren Rouse started digital photography school, he was not nearly an expert photographer, but he very clearly framed his position as I am a diehard to the end fan of photography. Yes. I want to learn more. Will you come along with me? And that's the way to position it when you're in that position.
Yeah, be an enthusiast, right. You know, and I'll be the first to tell you that when I started having to try to teach people copywriting and content marketing, my own level of sophistication exploded because I was forced to truly examine these issues at a level to where I could communicate it to others, right? Teaching is one of the best authority builders in the world, not only in the way people view you, but in enhancing your own expertise. So again, you know, the new project I'm going to be starting, I am by no means an expert in any of it, but I am passionate about applying these principles to my own life, and therefore I'm taking people along with me.
All right. Number two, one of my favorite things, I've talked about this a bunch over the years after hearing you and Sonia bring it up early on, is get thee to the newsstand. Go to the magazine rack. Look at the magazines on the rack. What do you mean by this?
Well, so even if you are in the market, you are an enthusiast, you are a member of the tribe you want to lead, you still have to do research. You just might not have to. You're not starting from zero when you are similar to who you're trying to reach. So in any scenario, research is crucial, but I do this all the time. I did it again with my most current project. Go to Barnes & Noble, anywhere where there is a big selection of magazines, and look around. Find out if you have an idea for a membership site or some sort of digital commerce, you know, premium content site, is there a magazine on it? How many? How are they positioned? Because really that's what it comes down to. You need to find a topical market that is big enough to bring you enough people, you're not going to reach them all. And that's always the danger of, you know, going really niche. Hey, no one is talking about this yet. What does Sonia call it? Naked mole rats?
Naked mole rats.
Yeah. Naked mole rat enthusiast. There is no magazine for that. If there is a paper magazine for a topic, then it is a viable niche.
It means there's advertising in it, and people are paying to not only to buy it, but people are paying to be seen in it.
And then you look not only at the content, but you look at who's advertising. What, you know, that's
right.
That's really informative to figuring out what's happening here, and it really helps inform your own strategy, because you're getting more specific with every step you take in your research to understanding what the audience wants currently and what they could want in the future that is slightly unique.
Yeah. One side note on this, if you're building any kind of a hyper-local website and making that kind of play, if you go to your local newsstand or grocery store or bookstores, and sadly, you know, so many of these newsstands are gone now, but you'll see that not only are the big magazines there that are always there, but you'll see interest from your community. For instance, I'm in Oregon here, out in Oregon's wine country. There's all kinds of wine magazines at a local grocery store that we go to. But there's also like heavy duty, like an entire rack of hunting and fishing magazines that are not going to show up in newsstands in Portland. So that might inform some of those of you who are working on local websites as well. There's all kinds of little angles to approach it with.
Absolutely. You know, the free lifestyle magazines in any area are amazing at giving you a big head start. You know, my Boulder site, yourboulder.com, you know, I mean, there are several free and paid competing local Boulder publications, and I'm killing them all online, right? Because they're focused on print, and that's good for them. But they're very bad at online, and that is an opportunity.
Number three, big topic with niche positioning.
So, yeah, I kind of touched on this, but I mean, you want a huge and competitive area, topical area. You know, I always talk about the big three, not counting technology, which is obviously a huge one and super saturated. But, you know, health and wellness, money and investing, wealth, if you will, and personal development. Those are eternal. There will always be room for more, especially if you're coming at it with a unique perspective. And how could you not, since you are a unique human being? But that's only the beginning, right? You know, again, it comes down to being part of your market. That helps, because your personality cannot be duplicated. But you also have to look to position yourself in a way that is perceived to be something completely new, right? And a lot of people struggle with positioning, but it is the most important thing. I mean, I could point out countless examples of blogs or newsletters or magazines that are essentially talking about the same exact thing, and yet they are completely different in the eyes of the audience.
And not only that, reprinting the same exact articles and headlines on a whatever 6 to 8 month to a year schedule.
Yeah. So you're thinking of the old men's health thing, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. You may want to explain that if people don't catch it. Basically, men's health, what is the cycle? But they'll do like a different cover photo and the same exact headlines for stories.
I'll
once
drop
a year
a,
or something
yeah,
like that.
I don't know
that.
What the cycle is. It might be even longer, but I'll drop a link to a post Damien Farnworth did, kind of a little look at this, and he found this great picture that I think you can probably easily find online, but it's four up of, you know, four different men's health covers. Picture is different, almost word for word on the headlines for, of course, the same articles. Over a period of, I'm sure those four examples are over a period of a couple of years at least, but it's very interesting. And you know what? I don't read Men's Health, but you know, whatever, pick your magazine. You, as far as I know, I was never aware that that was happening.
Well, of course not, because, you know, those type of things people tend to come in and out of depending on where they're at in their life, you know, and the topics are pretty much the same, you know, at any given time. You want to lose weight, you want to gain muscle, you know, I mean, improve your sex life. I mean, it's the same thing. You don't have people. I would be very surprised to find that there are people who have been subscribed to Men's Health for like 10 years, unless they're just really not paying attention, you know? Yeah. But the goal here is, you know, you tap into existing desire with these things. You're not creating desire. What you are creating is the impression of a unique approach to satisfying that desire. I mean, that's essentially what marketing, specifically with regard to content, is. It's voice, it's editorial positioning, it's how am I coming at this topic that is not quite the same as everyone else, and which I know from being one of these people and doing copious amounts of research that this is something that's right on the cusp of the way people are thinking about this topic.
Number four, you have down trend watching.
Exactly. And that's how you do it. That's how you create an editorial positioning, which is unique. It's fresh. It's innovative, even though you are talking about timeless topics. I mean, there's always new fitness research, you know, trends, fads, whatever. There's always new ways to make money or new ways to lose money. Mostly in the stock market, that never changes. But so trend watching is just as it sounds, except I want to make sure I distinguish between a trend and a fad. A trend is a long-term shift, a movement in a direction within a broader topical area. So the green movement is a trend. It is not a fad. It is something that has been happening for a long time and is accelerating with certain people. It's being pushed back against other people. Those are not your audience. It doesn't matter, right? Is, say, gluten-free. I don't know this one yet. It almost appears like it's going to be a trend.
That's interesting, yeah.
Even though I thought it was a fad.
Yeah.
So that remains to be seen, but that's what you have to determine. So you could start a wellness site that has a broader positioning that includes gluten-free, but you don't have to call your site gluten-free, you know, community, right? Because you are at that point, you are betting everything on that one trend. And I did see a magazine, gluten-free magazine, you know. That may be why I'm thinking it's a larger trend, or they're very into cashing in for a brief period of time and then going to do something else, which is technically nothing wrong with that. But I like,
no,
I like long-term things.
Right.
I like things that are going to keep going and you can evolve your content with it as opposed to, oh, I got to start over.
I do too. And obviously there's a lot of people that make a lot of money on fads. But to me, that always seemed like a really exhausting deal, number one. But number two, your comment about trends, a trend is something that you're working on, writing about, that is more long-term. Because again, we're talking about building an audience here. Fad to fad to fad to fad is, you know, that's a not impossible way to build any kind of a meaningful audience.
There are some people out there who think content marketing is a fad. I'll tell you right now, it is not. It is a trend because no one's going to raise their hand and say, yeah, enough with the useful information, just pitch me.
Right.
You know, it's not going that direction, right?
Right.
So the empowered prospect is the engine of the trend towards content marketing. So really, you're looking at the results of broader trends, and the internet empowered people to take things into their own hands as opposed to the companies and corporations being in charge of the sales process. That's a huge trend. It's not going away. Trendwatching.com is a good site. There's free and paid content there. If you're really serious, you can buy research reports that take a really serious deep dive. I do think there are certain scenarios where it's worth the investment. You know, so one of a trend that a couple of trends I identified. There is, I'm going to forget, it's LOHAS basically, but it's basically people who are, you know, they're kind of like hippie yuppies, like those of us here in Boulder. You know, they're into organic, they're into sustainability, they're into, you know, conscious investment, you know, green, all of this kind of stuff, spirituality. It's a very well-defined market segment that is big and growing, right? So understanding that market, it has informed my content strategy. It's not about that, but that's an aspect of it. Here's another thing, healthy aging. Now you're thinking, okay, that may apply to people like you in your 40s and up, but no, actually, when you dig into the research, the millennials are very interested in healthy aging. Why do you think that is, Robert?
Because they think they're going to make it to the singularity.
Yeah, they're the first generation. Hopefully not the first. I'm still going for Gen X, but millennials have a decent shot at living a lot longer than any other human if science and technology keep breaking through in areas of longevity. You know, at a minimum, people will start living to over 100 years routinely. That has been increasing on like a linear path throughout the last, 100 years? So that alone will continue. So the better you take care of yourself when you're young, the better shape you're generally going to be in when you're older, right? But yeah, so that was fascinating to me that it's not healthy aging is not an old person topic, because if you're already old, you're probably kind of stuck with the decisions you made when you were younger, which I'm trying to get over. So
yeah, I'm not sure I can take this shit for 100 years. We'll find out.
Yeah, I know. It's like living a long life, and is it actually worth living?
Right. That's the real question.
That's the real question.
We get into philosophy, you and I get going. Okay. Anything else on trend watching?
Trendhunter.com, and there's a site called Springwise that deals with trends specifically in the context of startups. So springwise.com. Go check those out. Again, there's some combination of paid and free, but there's a lot of great information that's on their free stuff.
I'll drop those in the notes, of course. Okay, so let's move to number 5 in this list of 7 ways to find a topical market that will fuel your digital commerce business, and that is find out what's already selling.
Yeah, and you can see how all of these interrelate. But again, don't be afraid of competition. Don't be afraid that someone else is selling something similar to what you have envisioned. That is a good sign. It shows that people are willing to pay for something. And if they're willing to pay for it and you connect with them better or provide more value or just take that, you know, that unique angle that really resonates with people, and yet effectively it's kind of the same thing, you still win. You know, you've still got a viable business. So it's important to go into big markets. It's important to find out what's already selling and then use that information to make yourself unique or more valuable or, you know, as the case may be, something that's going to resonate with people in a way that your research has revealed. This is where it gets squishy, because people are always like, well, what's the bright sign I'm looking for? Man, if I could tell you that, you know, we wouldn't be doing this podcast. So it's in there. That's all I can say. It's in there if you look.
Number 6, you've listed something here that you have an interesting take on, and that is doing surveys.
Yeah, certainly. If you are very smart about surveying and you have an existing audience, or you tap into someone else's audience through, you know, some sort of native advertising or pay-per-click or something, you can get very valuable information from people. The tough thing about surveying is multiple choice is almost always not going to be as valuable of information as you'd like, because you're restricting the response for your own convenience. You're probably subtly suggesting or influencing the answers. People will tell you what you want to hear, and never buy from you. I mean, what people say they'll buy and what they'll buy are two different things. There's only one marketing genius in the world, and that's the guy with the credit card who pulls it out and says, yes, I want that. So surveying, open-ended. I don't know if you
open-ended remember. Open-ended questions.
Yeah, there used to be like this internet marketing thing called Ask platform or something like that. And it was just this really simple software, like simple form software. And that was the deal. It wasn't multiple choice. You know, they had to type in.
Oh, none of it was. Yeah.
Yeah. At all. Like Derek Halpern does social triggers. He does something when you sign up for his list, he asks what your number one problem is right now. And he wants you to respond freeform because that's it. It's not as neat and able to be put in a box, but it's more authentic and it's more likely to provide you with insight. But here's a lesson here. Derek asks about problems or desires, right? He does not ask you what you want to buy. As Steve Jobs says, that's up to you to figure out what they want to buy. But even as, you know, everyone thinks Jobs was such a genius and that he just created desire for something that didn't exist. No. Everything that Apple sells, with the exclusion of maybe the iPad, which was probably his biggest gamble, were just improvements on existing things. Mm. I mean, the iPod was not the first MP3 player. It was the first one that was beautiful, yeah. Right, and functional.
And the first one with amazing marketing behind it, by the way.
Oh, yeah, all of it, right? Apple is actually a great example of improving on what's already out there and just owning it as opposed to trying to create something completely unique. And the other thing about Jobs is, you know, he was great at identifying existing desire and satisfying it. That does not mean he created desire.
Yeah, right.
I'm a firm believer that desire is out there. It's up to the entrepreneur to recognize it and then to create something that satisfies it. So surveys, you don't ask them what they want to buy. You identify problems and desires. And that's what we did on Copyblogger for 9 years now. We just didn't do it by surveys. We just watch, you know? And again, that's one of those things that drives people insane. What do you mean, listen or watch? Just that, you know? It's all out there in social media, especially unscripted, unfiltered, probably more than you'd like, but it's real.
And finally, number 7, the minimum viable membership site. This sounds interesting.
Yeah. And I do have to admit, we have never done this because, you know, by this point, by the time we launched Teaching Sales, by the time we then launched Third Tribe and then Authority later, we're right there. You know, I mean, we understand our people, and that's why we've never developed a product that failed. But this comes from the whole lean startup world, the minimum viable product, all that thing. So here's one thing I do when developing any sort of paid content play. I start mapping out headlines and copy before I create the thing, because that tells me what I have to create. It kind of goes back to why I write a headline first. It tells me what I'm promising and therefore what I have to deliver. Same thing with paid content. The copy has to effectively tease at the benefits of knowledge in a way that you then have to satisfy, right? So again, this may be dicey to some people, but I could see how it would be an amazing market research thing. You basically create your outside of your membership site with copy and everything based on what you'd like to create. And this is something that's done all the time in the lean startup world. You basically throw paid traffic at it. And when people get to the sign up part, you know, you have to let them go far enough to where you have a firm indication that they actually want to buy that. But if you haven't created it yet, you either have to give them a notice that we're not taking members at this time or whatever. You got to be careful not to lie. You know, I think there aren't careful and they just flat out lie. I don't believe in that. But you have to do something that's obviously going to disappoint someone who was going to buy from you. But the fact that someone wanted to buy from you, is it? That's What did I say? That is it. That's the only way you'll ever know. How do you know what someone wants to buy? They bought it. Building the front end of your site and then seeing if your hypothesis that people want this type of training program or membership site, that's very important. Then you go into product development, or like when we first launched Teaching Sales, that's all it was. It was a report and it was outside copy, and we got people to join up and we delivered the content over the next year. Right. So there's always that method too. That is something we've obviously done. You know what you want to create. You go through your whole launch process. You know, once I put out the first Teaching Sales report, I knew that I had identified the right thing. But creating the content, you know, especially remember that at that time, Copyblogger made no money. You know, I had been going for a year and 9 or 10 months making money in other ways, building the audience on Copyblogger. Then we launched something and we got paid to create it. So that's the ballsier approach to the minimum viable membership site. Actually sell something that doesn't exist yet, but people are paying you. You have to deliver. But in a way, it's like a Kickstarter thing. I forgot the Kickstarter thing. People are used to this now, right? You promise something that doesn't exist, they give you money, and then you have to deliver it, right? Well, we did that in 2007 on our own with our own audience. So,
well, and the beauty of doing it this way as opposed to even the nice, shiny new Kickstarter way is that not only are they paying to get this thing going for this thing that you have, the course in this case, planned out, the membership site planned out, but I remember you telling me that once you got going, those customers, those first customers, as they were working through Teaching Sales, actually altered the course of Teaching Sales in some cases by the feedback they were giving you, by the listening you were doing to them, to those paying customers, right?
Yeah. It's just like we talk about with content marketing strategy. When you're giving away free content, you've got to iterate. You've got to see what works and what doesn't, what people are saying, and what it's a constant process, you know. So I liked that we did Teaching Sales that way because I had the core concept correct, but the implementation of that, I started realizing, okay, people need more than I thought they did on you know, the groundwork, right? And yeah, having actual, you know, we released Rainmaker, we've released every single product we ever have this same way since Teaching Sales all the way to Rainmaker. We're giving you our best deal. You give us feedback. We promise to listen. And it's always worked.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you stumbled onto this broadcast and you'd like to get it delivered to you, the best way to do that is to go to rainmaker.fm and sign up via email. When you do that, you'll also be given free access to 2 weeks of training that will likely change the way you think about online marketing. You can also grab this show in iTunes, and if you like what's going on around here, please leave a comment or rating for us while you're there. It is always much appreciated. Mr. Clark, I'll see you next week, man.
Thank you, Mr. Bruce.